Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm chatting with Glenn Coates, VP of Product at Shopify. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm talking to you, and I'm going to learn all about what's going on at Shopify. We were actually talking a little bit at the beginning, and then I realized that we should just hit record because you were going to tell me about when you started your first engineering story there.
Yeah, well, so Scott was pre-record telling me the story of this Bluetooth device that he's got on his body for reasons I'm sure he'll describe at his own leisure, but encrypting catching the signal between two Bluetooth devices, and it's going to be decrypted, and he's playing cat and mouse with blah, 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 blah. My first software engineering job was at a video games company in Sydney called Big World. And I was, I think, 1 year out of university. I'd spent a year DJing because I was still in denial that I was a nerd and I was trying to be cool. But then I admitted it. And then I went and got a software engineering job at a video games company. And, there was a guy who worked there who had been at my high school, like I think 3 or 4 years senior to me. His name was John, John Dalgleish. Brilliant guy. And I show up at this job and he's on long service leave when I show up. So I'm there for like 4 weeks and there's an empty desk with John's name on it. He comes back and I'm like, hey man. And he's like, oh yeah, we went to high school together. We go for lunch the first day. We're walking up the street. And he's like, what'd you do on the weekend? And I'm like, oh, I went out and my friend's drinking. I went surfing or blah, 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 a bunch of like young kid stuff. And I was like, what do you do on the weekend? And he said, oh, and he pulls out this digital camera. This is back in like 2003 or something. Pulls out a digital camera, shows me in the back of it. And it's a photo of a Power Mac G4 on its side with the case off. And it's a TV tuner card with like alligator clips on it. And I'm like, what is that? And he's like, oh yeah, I'm reverse engineering this hardware TV tuner card in software. And I'm basically like reading all of the bit streams off the actual circuit board using alligator clips to like reverse engineer this hardware thing. And I was like, I'm in so much. I'm so in the deep end, way more than I thought. I was like, if this is the guy who sits next to me at this job, I'm a dead man. Like what is happening?
But isn't that energizing or is that demotivating? Cause that's energizing for me.
It was energizing. And I was like, man, I better catch up quick. Like I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. The tool we're talking about is the Dexcom blood sugar meter that I use to manage my diabetes. And, the folks went and, you know, reverse engineered the Bluetooth and doing that kind of fun stuff. That's like the least boring thing I can think of doing. Like I've got on my desk here, you can't really see, but I've got a kit that you can buy that is building an Apple One, like the original Wozniak Apple One from original parts, and like building it out on a board and then flashing it with the original ROM, like that kind of nerdery. And like someone was like, why are you doing that? We have the cloud, you know, do it on a Raspberry Pi. And I'm like, no, man, you gotta do it to learn. You gotta learn how to do these things.
That's like the argument for like, why play a musical instrument when you can just type a prompt into Suno? It's like, cause it's fun.
Okay. See, let's talk about that because like my son wants to be an artist and people are saying, you don't want to go to school for art. He just started university 8 weeks ago and he wants to do anime. And the haters are saying, well, you just type into AI, like the name of your anime, it'll do the whole thing. I'm like, that just cheapens art.
Do you know what's a good thing that I noticed in the last couple of years? On a whim, I think I got Instagram targeted a couple of years ago, or maybe a year ago, to buy one of those like Polaroid, like the new Polaroid i2 camera, the one that's like just some Swedish company bought the rights and now they make Polaroid stuff again. And the film for this camera it's 8 shots in a cartridge.
Yep.
And each cartridge, I think, is $25. So it's like $3 a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And everyone's like, that thing's huge. The photos come out mostly pretty terrible. You're not very good at holding a camera. And I'm like, right, but I fucking love these things. Every one of these things is such an important memory for me. Like I keep them, I put them on the walls, I spread them out on the dining table. People come over for dinner and they're like, oh, look, who's that? And like, you know, and I love these things. Guess what I don't feel like that about?
Yeah. Any digital picture.
All the photos in my iPhone.
You know what you're never going to ever do? This is what we need to tell the people. You're never going to relook at that video you took of the fireworks.
I know.
Right. I know. Like, when I see people looking at reality through their 7-inch screen of a blurry, horrible, digitally zoomed. When they digitally zoom, that's the worst. That is awful. And actually, for my wife's 50th birthday a couple months ago, we got the Bluetooth Polaroid inkless printers. So everyone take pictures. And then rather than them doing digital uploads that no one's ever going to look at, they all Bluetooth them over to these things. And I handed out Polaroids. So everyone went home with a physical Polaroid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are basically, on the one hand, it's just like scarcity equals value. So that's one thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is like, you know, we're still sort of like apes, right? And apes have these very like physical, tactile, our brains are wired for a certain sort of loop that's only activated by the physical and the tactile and the immediate and the community and all those words. But, you know, just because something can be done at zero cost and infinite scale doesn't mean that like this piece of hardware up here is going to react to it the same way.
Okay. So here's the pivot and here's what I want to talk about. What should be commoditized? What should be simple? What should be boring? What should be easy? And what shouldn't? So for context, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I figure I probably got like 10 years on you.
I'm 43. How old are you?
I'll be 51 in January. You look fantastic. Oh my God. You've been moisturizing.
It's because I'm half Asian. I'll look like this until I'm about 60.
Yeah.
And then suddenly look like a very old Chinese man.
Yeah. When does that happen? Is it just a moment that's going to happen? Is it on a random Tuesday?
I think your number comes up one day, like a guy, like you get a knock on the door and suddenly you're just like, you lose a foot.
Yeah, you lose a foot and you're old. Well, mission accomplished, man. You look great. Keep moisturizing. So 25 years ago, maybe even longer, I worked at a place called 800.com, 800.com, and it's pre-Amazon. And my job was managing the web farm. And this was a time when web farm management was a thing, right? You would hire consultants from like Cisco Local Director or F5, and they'd fly a person in and they would teach you how to scale the web farm. And then one of the business people says, we're going to do a deal. We're going to do 3 DVDs for $1. It's going to be huge. And it completely changed the characteristics of scaling because we went from a site where people were basically 80% of the time browsing the product catalog.
Sure.
To 80% of the people had all of their DVDs picked out. They just wanted to give us money. So we had to change the scale and scale up the shopping cart and scale down the product catalog. And the business guy didn't get that. He didn't understand that, like, he's like, they just want to give the money because he was a business person. He wanted to sell DVDs. Yeah,
totally.
Now, fast forward. That entire section of my resume is just a checkbox in the cloud somewhere.
Totally.
Or it's been solved by Shopify. Is that a good thing? Is that the kind of boring that we want to abstract away?
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, I've had this conversation with Toby. It always comes around about once every 6 months. And we talk about some part of Shopify that is historically hard and we're going to make easy by just doing it in software or doing it at scale or something like that. And this conversation always ends up with the like, well, the logical endpoint of all of this is that the entire Shopify admin just gets replaced with a huge red button that says, make me money. Right.
Yeah. But isn't that just end stage capitalism? That's like too far. Cause what I like about Shopify for me is it enables like small and medium-sized businesses to look like big businesses. It makes people powerful.
But no one ever wants to go there. This is the point. Is like nobody at Shopify thinks that going all the way to Shopify disappears and there's just a huge red button that says make me money. Because by the way, if everyone has access to that red button, then everyone's getting like the yield on that red button will like go to zero, right? Mm. And so I think it just comes down to like what you value as a society. Like, do you value what's the unique thing that each person brings to the table that you value? Like, is it really like their website is fast? Probably not. You're like, hey, like, can everyone's website just be fast? Like,
That's not a differentiator.
Right. What is a differentiator, though, is so like the marginal cost of atoms has not yet gone to zero, right? So atoms are still a thing that one costs one thing, right? So the physical product you produce is still differentiated. Like, what is the idea for the thing that I'm going to buy here? The other thing that's differentiated, I think, is stories, right? Like the story that you tell about why this product exists, who you are, why anyone should care, why, like, because when someone buys, like, you know, like a, I don't know, like, I mean, we're both sort of audio musical people. Like when you buy like a keyboard from like Fender Rhodes, or you buy like, I mean, I'm a bit of a teenage engineering fanboy, but like when you buy their stuff, you're not just buying the thing, you're buying into the story and the point of view that they have, right? And so that's the thing that I think is different. And I think digital, like, there's I mean, some of the sites that are on Shopify that are really interesting. There's one that was done a year or two ago called Drake Related. That is like a, I mean, if you go to it, like go to drakerelated.com, it's literally like a, I can't remember what it's built in, but it's not built like any other e-commerce website you've ever seen. And it's kind of going around his house and his studio, and you can like buy different, it's like a isometric,
you know what it looks like? Thing. It looks like an old style image map where you would like, he's got a photograph of, of his like ottoman, and then there's hot spots on it. And then it's stuff that's lying around that you can buy.
Exactly.
That's right. Sitting, so that's on his thing.
But that website is a piece of art, right? It's like a very particular point of view of like, we're going to create this experience, and it's not going to be like any other online store that you're going to visit today.
Oh, this is, right? A Shopify store.
It's a Shopify store. Yeah. It's built in Hydrogen.
Oh, it doesn't. Yeah. I wouldn't. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because I have been inundated with, I made a mistake about a week ago when I clicked on a watch ad in Instagram. And for the last 9 days, every single thing on the internet has decided that I need a watch. And they all look exactly the same. Every website for this watch looks the same. I assume because they're using the default, but I would not have guessed that this was Shopify, which is what I want to see. Like, I want that kind of creativity. I want to see a different message, a different story.
Right. And so to come back to your original question, like, things that we want to be commoditized are, is the, like the technical part of like, is this reliable? Is it fast? All of that stuff kind of can melt away. And actually, like, this is sort of a funnel thing, but like, I feel like the journey of someone on a website, particularly like an online store, the start of the journey is like, kind of, who is, like, what's this site? Why should I care? What's the story, right? That's what the beginning of the website is all about. It's like, tell me why I'm even here and why I should care. The further you get to the bottom where the checkout is, that's where like, you don't want creativity down there. It's like, I'm about to hand you money. I'm not looking for creativity. I'm looking for guarantees. I want to know that you're not scamming me. I want to know that the shipping is going to show up. I'm looking for reassurance. I'm not looking for like blowing my mind right now. And so what we try to do at Shopify is like give you the tools to build that differentiated storytelling thing near the top. But then by the time you're getting to checkout, it's actually becoming much, much, much more consistent. A lot of Shopify checkouts look almost the same. And that's a feature, not a bug. Because like when I'm giving you money, I want to see a thing that I've seen before. I want to feel safe.
So I am very much a person that is like, if the price point is right, I'll buy the thing, you know, like buy first, think second. And I regret that. But there's a feeling where it's like, oh, they're going to make this so easy to take this money from me. But if there's any friction at all, I will abandon a cart and I will never return. You know, I will bail. But it's like, if it's like, oh, we'll text you a number and all you have to do is hit, you know, I've seen you before. I've seen your credit card before. I'll take your money. Apple Pay. Oh, if you've got Apple Pay and I'm on my mobile, the stuff that I will buy.
It's happening.
But if you go back to the 90s, the amount of work that it required to just get someone to fill out their address and to fill out their credit card, to do credit card validation. So all of those problems you're saying have been solved. Like the taking money part is not the differentiator. It's a funnel. It truly is a funnel. And you have unlimited flexibility at the top open part of the funnel to tell your story.
Exactly. I mean, even the technical stack of Shopify reflects that, right? Like the tooling we give you to build storefronts, you effectively have control all the way down to the base plate of the HTML, right? You can literally do anything within reason. Like if you do fraud things, we're going to come after you, but like within reason, you can do anything. By the time you come to the checkout, it's a much more controlled stack. You no longer have access to the DOM, and there's extensibility, but it's very controlled because we're trying to preserve the consistency and the security of that experience and make it a safe place for someone to like give you lots of money.
Mm. That's interesting. I just had this thing pop in my head. You've almost made the internet's checkout process. And like,
yes,
you worry about the store, you worry about the story, we'll handle checkout. But at the same time, you've given them all of these, the structures and the tools, because I know a lot of Shopify developers, people identify, they self-identify as Shopify developers. I'm not a dev, Shopify dev, and they can go and have all kinds of fun.
Yeah. I mean, look, the fundamental problem of Shopify is, and it's why Shopify is a hard thing to build, is because if you went through the data model of Shopify in the back end, like the products and the inventory and the orders and the collections and the shipping rules and yada, 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 what you would find is that the vast majority of Shopify's data model somehow shows up in the checkout as influencing the transaction, governing how much you're going to pay for something, what the shipping rules are, the taxes, the duties, yada, 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 all that stuff, right? And what this stuff ends up being is it's actually an attempt to encode all of the ways that humans trade with one another into software. Because at the moment that the checkout happens, like the checkout is going to charge your card a certain amount of money. And that amount of money has to be right, and it has to reflect the deal that's on the table. Now, the problem is that the deal that's on the table is all the deals of all the tables of planet Earth across all the industries, across all the countries, across all the currencies. And is it, am I buying this once? Am I buying a subscription? Am I buying it retail? Am I buying it wholesale? And so you end up with this thing that's like the Shopify checkout is really a, how do you encode human trade into a piece of software? And so that's why it's a hard thing to build, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because in my mind, I've been seeing this inverted pyramid going from top at the, you know, the big funnel at the top to checkout at the bottom. And in my mind, in my mind's eye, in my own mental DOM, the checkout problem has been quite small. It's not. There's another pyramid underneath it that's like the bait. The checkout part is as complicated or more so.
Oh yeah, the checkout team at Shopify has the hardest job of all the teams, and no shade to everyone else, but all of the dependencies of all the teams at Shopify run towards that single team because almost everything at Shopify somehow affects the checkout. And so, yeah, it's a very, very, very hard problem. And this is like, you see this, you know, every so often someone will show me like a startup that's like, oh, we've got this new thing that like can build a little mobile app or a little website thing or a something or other. And then the same thing keeps happening where they're like, oh, well, what do people want to do with this? Well, a bunch of the users would love to sell things. And then they're like, oh, well, let's just add a checkout. How hard could it be? Well, you know, you add something to the cart and it costs $5 and blah, 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 blah. And then they suddenly run into the like, right, but what about all the countries? And what about all the taxes? And what about all the blah? And then it's suddenly you're like, oh my God, this is human trade. This is a kind of a large problem, you know.
Hey, friends, in the interest of me learning more about AI and helping you learn more about AI, for the next couple of episodes, we're going to have Leendert van Doorn from Qualcomm help me understand AI. What is an NPU and why is it important today?
So the NPU stands for Neural Processing Units, and it's basically your AI accelerator. And so it can execute AI operations, these large language models, or all sorts of different generative AI models in a much more efficient way than a CPU or a GPU can. So just to give you an example with Microsoft's Recall, like you run that continuously in the background, running it on an NPU takes about 30 minutes of overall battery lifetime. If you were to run it on a GPU, it would take 6.5 hours, right? So it's all about energy efficiency, very specifically dedicated to a single task. which is AI in this case.
Very cool. So I'm going to go learn more about NPUs and how they can do things more cheaply from a battery perspective, more efficiently, and why I might want a Snapdragon processor in my next PC.
Exactly. Thank you.
And folks can check out more at qualcomm.com/developer to download those things and learn more today.
The folks that that set us up to have you on the show said that there's this concept of boring software. And it feels like I find this to be fascinating. This is not boring at all. But for the user, checking out is boring. So it's kind of funny. You want to make the checkout process as reliable and dull and friction-free as possible for the user. No surprises. But the back end must not be boring at all.
Well, this is the thing. So like the question is, I mean, boring is a bit tongue-in-cheek. I can tell you how came about. So if we cycle back... So I've had my job at Shopify for about 4 years now. And when I took over what is called Shopify Core internally, which is what most people in the outside think of as Shopify. So the checkout, the storefront, the back end, the dev platform. Shopify was, I would call it like capability light 4 years ago for the scale that it was operating at. And like people were trying to do things with Shopify that it really did not have the capabilities for. And so they were doing all these hacks on hacks on hacks to make weird business models work. And it was just kind of, it was clearly things that should have been in the core part were not there. So I would say on balance over the last 3 or 4 years, we've gone and added in a bunch of these missing capabilities, like being good at selling internationally, being good at selling point of sale, being good at selling B2B, making the developer platform much more feature rich. But the thing that happened, and I am regretful of this, I don't know that I would have done it differently. I think it was the right call. But what always happens, and I'm sure you've seen this, you know, a million times, and this has happened to a million teams at Microsoft and every big company, is there's a nonlinear cost of like, as you add more features to a platform, the cost to back integrate each new feature into the existing feature set goes up. Because there's just more stuff that you have to be like, oh, right, it has to work with all these existing things, right? And especially the teams that were there at the beginning are not used to like the back integration cost, right? Because they remember when there was only 10 features and they're like, oh, what, there's 100 features now? Like, oh, I don't have time for this, right? And so what happens is the new features end up not working so well with the entirety of the existing platform, right? And so the users start having these like absurd things where they're like, oh, well, you know, as an example, like, hey, Shopify, you do subscriptions and you do B2B, but I can't do a B2B subscription. That's insane. And then they'll come to us and be like, hey, that's insane. And the only real explanation for why that's true is because it's like, well, that's the subscriptions team and that's the B2B team and they didn't talk, right? Which is a terrible answer.
Yeah, about this. I have another podcast. We talked about shipping the org chart, and the customer does not care about your org chart, but you just shipped it when you didn't allow B2B subscriptions.
Exactly, right. And so I noticed, you know, and Emma, who runs product marketing for me, and a couple of my team members came to me after the last edition, which we put out 6 months ago, and they said, hey, Glenn, we think we should probably focus a bit more on integrating our existing feature set than adding new features. And they said, but hey, we're just going to warn you, that's going to mean the next edition is going to be a little bit boring. And I was like, that's actually what the title of the next edition should be. We should just make it the boring edition. And it should just be like, we're just going to make everything better. No new whiz bang features. There's actually no headline really. There's no new, like, here's the big new iPhone, here's the big new AirPods. There just isn't one. It's just,
see,
everything better.
Was that hard to sell? Because listen, I have been saying that. Now, this is my podcast and we're doing this on my own time, but I do work for Microsoft in my day job. I have been saying we should do a boring version of Windows. Just tighten the screws. Just make it better for a year. Everybody just shut up for a year. No more buttons. Just make it boring. I love that you sold that. Did anyone push back? But you're a VP. You can do whatever you want to, right?
I think people were worried. They were like, how's the press going to react when we say it's boring? But the reality, did you remember, I mean, you're a Windows guy, maybe you don't remember this, but I remember, do you remember Snow Leopard on Mac OS?
Yeah. I remember when it left my Mac Mini, because Snow Leopard is when it said the Mac Mini is now left behind. And I have a Mac Mini that's still on Snow Leopard, because that's when the moment was.
Dude, I got a crazy story for you about Snow Leopards and Mac Mini in a second. But I remember Snow Leopard as such a great release of Mac OS, because Leopard was really new and had all this weird shit, but it was kind of unstable. And then Snow Leopard just came in and just tightened everything up.
Tightened everything up, exactly. It was a polished version of Leopard.
Yeah, I was like, this one, this is it. I made a meme internally where I was like, I made an emoji that I would put on product reviews that was just like the little snow, like snowflake thing, and then a leopard. And I would just start leaving those two emojis everywhere every time someone proposed a project that was like that. And then everyone was like, Glenn, no one understands what Snow Leopard is. And then, I mean, boring's a better name. But
no, yeah. I totally am picking up what you're putting down. Yeah, but yeah, the thing I remember was that, you know, there was a time when they switched processors, right? When they switched from PowerPC to Intel and then from Intel. But they left all these machines behind, and then there's still machines out there that are stuck on Snow Leopard, because that was the end.
Do you know how bad? Okay, I'm going to tell you a thing that's like, this is how bad of an engineer I am, and this is why it's good that I'm a product guy now. But like, so my first startup, my only startup, was a company called Handshake, and it was a sort of B2B only commerce platform, much like Shopify, but just wholesale only. It started out as an iPhone app. And the initial use case was like, hey, I'm a salesperson, I'm at a trade show, someone's coming to my booth, I want to enter orders for, you know, someone's going to order their, you know, my products into their store. So the initial product was just an iPhone app, and it was just like, you know, punching in orders, really good UI for doing that. So I prototyped this iPhone app. And I build the data model in Core Data, exactly. So I build the ORM in the data model in Core Data on the iPhone side. And then I have this genius idea, which is I'm really lazy. I don't want to re-implement the data model and the network stack on the server. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to compile out the data layer and the networking layer of the iPhone app into an Objective-C extension. And then I'm going to load the Objective-C extension into a Python server using PyObj-C on my, at the time it was Turbo Gears, eventually became Django thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, I am so smart. I just saved like 2 to 3 days of re-implementing all this shit in Python. I'm a goddamn genius. Of course, now I can only run my server on a Mac, right? Mm-hmm. So then the first server of Handshake was literally a Mac Mini that was stuck in the network closet of the WeWork that I worked out of back in 2010. And I had to know the IT guy at the WeWork, because every time he shut down the office, like, the server would go offline. But I had the Mac Mini that you had, which was, I think it was a Core 2 Duo Intel thing with two CPUs, right? And then eventually they shipped the quad core Mac Mini, right? Yep. And when that news came out, I was like, awesome. I'm going to go buy that. That's web scale. That's 2X.
That's web scale.
So I go to the Apple store, I buy the Mac Mini, and I come back and I try to install the Handshake server on it with this Objective-C extension thing in it. I boot the server, instantly crashes, because there's some bug in the Lion version of obj-C where it does a div by zero error on some particular decimal thing. It doesn't know how to divide decimals or something, right? So instantly it's crashing. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'll just install Snow Leopard on this new Mac Mini, and then I'll be able to run the server fine. Try to do that, can't, because the drivers are not for the new hardware. So now I realize, oh my God, I can only run the server for my entire startup on this one exact Mac Mini, which they don't even sell anymore. And I was like, I need to go to eBay and buy another one of these things right now as a backup. And then I spent a month like reprogramming the entire server just in like pure Python, because I was like, this is a sign. And this is why I'm not an engineer anymore.
Oh my God. And do you still have that Mini somewhere? This should be in a museum.
I do, actually. Yeah, it's somewhere here in my house. It's like, you know, it's in a trophy case or something.
That reminds me of the Tim Berners-Lee thing, where when the early days of the internet, Tim Berners-Lee and all of his interns were creating the World Wide Web, and there was like a server under his desk that was like, that's the internet, don't shut it off. It's right there. He had, like a little piece of paper on it. Just make sure you don't turn off the server, because that's the entire web. So this edition, the boring edition, is out December 11th.
That's right. Yeah.
So folks can check that out. And this is a giant product launch. It's your big product launch moment, and it's absolutely boring. And we should just expect Shopify to be better.
You should expect everything to be better, and you should expect things to work the way that you would have imagined, right? Mm. It's like when you buy, you know, it's like, what's great about, I don't know, I'm kind of a bit of an, again, you're Microsoft, but like, I'm a bit of an Apple fanboy. Do you know what's the
best? I'm non-denominational, to be clear.
Right. But it's like, you know, the Apple stuff, it's like, is the iPhone the best phone? Maybe, maybe not, but it connects to the head, to the AirPods and
the ecosystem.
It's perfectly integrated into everything. And every time I unwrap a new Apple product, it just instantly connects to everything. And I never have that thing where I'm like, oh, well, you've got headphones and you've got tablets, but for some reason, the headphones won't work with the tablet. That never happens. And I'm like, that's what great software should be like. It's like that thing where you're like, what? Why? And the answer, as we just talked about, is always, well, it's the X team and the Y team, and they just didn't talk. And that's like the worst answer in the world. So this edition is all about, how do we make performance better? How do we make things that should work together beautifully? How do we make things more reliable? How do we make the developer experience of something that is like possible, but kind of annoying, just really, really like fun? And it's not about, here's a million new bells and whistles.
Fantastic. So people who have not used Shopify, now is the time, jump in. And if you are a longtime fan, you're just going to go like, oh, everything got better on December 11th.
Exactly. And the funny thing is like, when I would talk to our customers, this is the stuff that they want. Like when I go to, you know, these, we do, you know, panels with our customers and we hear what they're interested in. It's so rare that one of them will come up to me and be like, you know what, Glenn, do you know what I wish Shopify would do? Like rocket ships, or, you know, tunnel underneath different cities, or like get into digital cars. Like they never say anything like that. They always come up to me and they're like, hey, why doesn't draft orders work with B2B? Or they come up to me and they're like, hey, why don't gift cards work on hydrogen? It's always something like that. And they're like, please. Like, I've got so much stuff to do in my business that is like commanding my attention. And what I don't want to be doing is trying to like plug your two APIs together to do the thing that they probably should be doing inside the box. And so I think we're just trying to make this one of the most dialed in, like beautiful pieces of software that's, I think we expect this in the world of consumer products. I think all the words that I'm saying, if someone's like, yeah, that's how my iPhone works, like, of course it works like
you
that.
You want to raise the expectation for this kind of stuff. You just said at the beginning that this is about human commerce. And if you can model it in the practice of human commerce, you should be able to model it in the back end of your Shopify shop.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I think there's the only thing I'll say is like Shopify is, as a company, quite successful now, right? I think, you know, today we're doing north of 10% of all e-commerce in the US. You know, Shopify is sort of in a strong market position. And, you know, I spent most of my career in companies that were not in a strong market position, right? Like smaller companies that were like startups, finding survival, get the next round of funding, competitors everywhere. And Shopify has been successful enough to, you know, it's not that we don't have competitors, but I think I am in the sort of, I'm in the luxurious position for the first time in my career where there's like a little bit of that breathing room where, you know, engineers are always like, oh man, I wish I could go back and do that thing properly. And there's always some like business thing that's driving them to be able to build the next thing before they're really finished with the current thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, this is one of those moments where we can actually just take a moment to breathe here and do it properly. And I actually had to stop the teams. It was very difficult because I've actually been saying this internally and like dropping my weird little snow leopard emojis around in internally for like, I don't know, a year and a half. And every time I would do my meeting with my product leadership, I'd say, hey guys, let's just turn the dial another 5 to 10 degrees towards quality and away from like new features. And I would say these words and I would think, okay, everyone's going to hear me and they're going to do it. But of course, everyone's just like excited about building new stuff and everyone wants to push the envelope. And it really took me this time. And again, I'll thank Emma, Marnie, Eitan, the people on my team who came to me and told me this. They said, Glenn, we should do the boring edition. And I really had to go internally and say, hey guys, literally, I don't need any new features in the next edition. No one is on the hook for anything. Please take this moment to just go dial it in. Whatever that thing is that you swept under the rug 3 quarters ago and it's like keeping you up at night, now's the time. Go do that thing. And like, this is the time to do the right thing. And I'm giving you the permission to do it. And it's actually worked now, but I had to say it way more forcefully than I thought I would have to in order to get people to think of it that way.
Very cool. Thank you so much for chatting with me today, Glenn Coates.
Thanks, Scott.
We have been talking all about boring software and the boring edition of Shopify that you can check out on or after December 11th. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.